Don Mockholtz, and you are listening to Looking Up with Don. This is the Looking Up with Don podcast, episode number 19 for the week of May 13th, 2020. The related website for this podcast is donmockholtz.com. That is spelled donmockholtz.com, two H's. What's up in the sky this week? As our week begins on Wednesday, May 13, the moon is nearing last quarter and is situated in our morning sky. New moon is on May 22nd. Venus is still in our evening sky, but it sets earlier each night. It is nearing maximum size, and it's a major crescent. It's great looking in a telescope or even a pair of binoculars. I have heard that some sharp-eyed people are able to discern the crescent phase of Venus with the unaided eye. Give it a try. Begin in twilight to reduce contrast. And through a telescope, use your cell phone to get some snaps. Realize that the surface brightness is high, so be careful not to overexpose it. Will you be able to see the International Space Station this week? This depends upon where you live. North of 15 degrees north, this is your week. Your International Space Station drought is over. The International Space Station will be visible in both your evening and morning sky. Some nights you can see it three or four times per night. So look up Canada, England, Denmark, Sweden, Germany, Ireland, Poland, France, Russia, China, Japan. It could be a long night staying up to watch each pass. Now, south of 15 degrees north, this is a transition week. Evening passes early in the week, and then none. Then morning passes late in the week. To determine where it will be in your sky, you can go to the website heavens-above.com, heavens-above.com, enter your location, then click on ISS. In podcast number 11, 12, and 13, I discuss public and private star parties, how to set them up, what to observe, and so on. Even though much of the world is still sheltering in place, it's not too early to start planning one for later this year. When would be good times to have a star party? Well, beginning in early July, both Jupiter and Saturn will be in your southern sky, and they'll stay there through December 21st when both Jupiter and Saturn will be very close to each other, but low in the west after sunset. So the season for seeing these two planets, Jupiter, Saturn, on the same night, is from early July until around mid-December. Mars comes to opposition on October 13th, so the weeks following that, when it's at a decent height in your eastern sky after evening twilight, would be another time to schedule the star party. That would be mid to late October. Once again, podcast 11, 12, and 13 cover star parties. Right ascension and declination. This is the sky's coordinate system used by astronomers to record and communicate the location of an object as seen from Earth. For instance, with every comet discovery, I've had to determine the coordinates of the object in order to report it. In my early days of teaching the adult education class at Sierra College in Northern California, I never introduced nor taught this subject. After a couple of years, I finally did, and I discovered two things. It's easy to learn about right ascension and declination. And number two, by learning the sky's coordinate systems, a beginner can more easily move on to the next level. Podcast 19, Map 1, which you can download for free from my website, has the grid lines for this coordinate system, and it might help to download that from my website and look it over as we go through this. It's right to learn, right ascension, and declination requires your attention. They'll take you to the place in shallow or deep space with little to no apprehension. Let's begin with the Earth's coordinate system. Many people are familiar with that. Going from east to west or west to east, we have longitude. The longitude changes as we go in those directions. Longitude is measured in degrees, minutes, and seconds, with 60 minutes to a degree and 60 seconds to a minute. Longitude has a reference line or a beginning point, and by convention, that is at Greenwich, England, near London. Property to the west of Greenwich is given a negative number from 0 to 180 degrees. All of North and South America and the Atlantic Ocean and half the Pacific Ocean are to the west of Greenwich, so they are designated by either a minus sign before the number of degrees or a W for west. Areas east of Greenwich include most of Africa, Europe, and Asia. They are designated with a plus sign or E for east and longitude. Where do the east and west meet? Well, 180 degrees east and 180 degrees west is the same place, opposite the world from Greenwich, in the Pacific Ocean, and that's where we have the international date line. Note that we are measuring degrees, not miles or kilometers. At the equator, 1 degree in longitude equals 69 miles or 111 kilometers. But as you move north or south of the equator, the longitude lines converge upon each other. That distance in miles or kilometers decreases, and they all meet at the north and south pole. That is longitude. Now for latitude. Latitude has the equator as the reference and is positive as we head north and negative as we head south. Latitude is numbered in degrees, minutes, and seconds, with zero being the equator and plus 90 and minus 90 at the north and south poles. 1 degree of latitude is 69 miles or 110 kilometers. So someone living at your longitude, but 10 degrees north or south of you, lives 690 miles or 1,100 kilometers away. That is the coordinate system for the Earth. Your house has coordinates, and they are fixed unless you move your house. As you drive down the road, your coordinates are constantly changing. Now for the sky coordinates. Instead of calling it longitude, it is called right ascension. Two words, and that is spelled capital R-I-G-H-T, then capital A-S-C-E-N-C-I-O-N. It begins at something called the first point of Aries, where the ecliptic crosses the equator as the sun heads north. It is measured in only one direction, eastward, and instead of degrees, it is in hours, minutes, and seconds. So the origin is 0 hours, 0 minutes, 0 seconds. And this wraps all around the sky until it gets back to near the beginning point at 23 hours, 59 minutes, 59 seconds. This makes it easy to work your way around the sky because it takes about an hour for an object to move 1 hour in right ascension. When speaking of right ascension, a minute is not the same as an arc minute, which is a measurement of apparent distance of angle. Here, a minute, like an hour, is more like a measurement of time. With 24 hours of right ascension equaling 360 degrees, each hour equals 15 degrees of angle at the equator. As you move north or south of the equator, each hour is less than 15 degrees. Also, every 4 minutes of RA at the equator, which is short for right ascension, equals 1 degree. And as you head north or south of the equator, 1 degree is not 4 minutes, but it becomes 5 or 6 minutes of right ascension. For example, if an object on the equator at 16 hours, 0 minutes is rising at 10 p.m., then 2 hours later, an object on the equator at 18 hours, 0 minutes will be rising. Since the Earth goes around the sun and the sky changes by 4 minutes per day and 2 hours per month, then that object at 16 hours right ascension that rises at 10 p.m. today will rise at 9:56 p.m. tomorrow, and in 1 month will rise at 8 p.m., 2 hours earlier. Declination in the sky is very similar to latitude on the Earth. It is referenced by the equator and runs positive north and negative south. It is in degrees, arc minutes, and arc seconds. A few things about declination. Here is some simple math to help you understand how much sky you can see from your latitude. Most people know their latitude. I'm talking today from a latitude of about 35 degrees north. How far north and south you can see is determined by your latitude on Earth. If you live at 35 degrees north, then the North Star, or more accurately, the North Pole of the sky, which is within 1 degree of the North Star, is 35 degrees high in your northern sky. If you're at 10 degrees north latitude, the North Star will be only 10 degrees high in your sky. And if you're at 50 degrees north latitude, the North Star will be higher, 50 degrees high in your sky. In fact, if you're lost in the ocean and you can measure the height of the North Star, you will know your approximate latitude because it equals the height of the North Star above your northern horizon. Now, the highest the equator gets in your sky is 90 minus 35, in my case, for 55 degrees high. So the equator gets as high as 55 degrees high in my sky. The sun in a year moves 23 degrees north and 23 degrees south of the equator. So in the summer, the sun reaches as high as 55 degrees, which is where my equator is, plus 23 degrees, which is 78 degrees high. And that is at the summer solstice when the sun is furthest north. So the sun will never get directly overhead at 35 degrees north, but only up to 78 degrees high. Now, at the winter solstice, when the sun is at its furthest south point, it reaches a maximum height of 55 degrees for the equator, minus 23 degrees, for 32 degrees high in your sky. Also, at 35 degrees north latitude, every object that is at a declination of plus 35 degrees passes directly overhead once a day. This occurs at any latitude. If you're on the equator, every object on the equator passes overhead once a day. And how far south can you see? At 35 degrees, you subtract that 35 from 90, and you get 55 degrees south declination. So everything south of 55 degrees south will not ever rise above your southern horizon, so that part of the sky is invisible to you. If you live at 50 degrees north latitude, then everything south of minus 40 south declination will never rise above your horizon. Now, looking due north, some of the sky never sets. It just goes around and around the North Star day and night. And this is called the circumpolar sky. How much sky? Well, at 35 degrees, we subtract that from 90 degrees, and that equals 55 degrees. So everything north of 55 degrees north declination will never set. That's most of the Big Dipper, most of Cassiopeia, and all of the Little Dipper. For the past few weeks, we've been talking about three comets in the evening sky. But from the mid-northern latitudes, they have been circumpolar. That's above the horizon all night long. Now, the cool thing is that everything in the sky has coordinates. The Orion Nebula, for instance, is at 5 hours, 35 minutes, minus 5 degrees, 27 minutes. The Andromeda Galaxy is at 00 hours, 43 minutes, plus 41 degrees, 17 minutes. The Pleiades, or Seven Sisters, are at 3 hours, 47 minutes, plus 24 degrees, 7 minutes. The Hercules Star Cluster is at 16 hours, 42 minutes, plus 36 degrees, 28 minutes. We can give these positions to any astronomer in the world, and they would turn their telescopes to these coordinates, and they would see the objects we have just identified. That is true anywhere, at any time, in any language. The sun, the moon, the planets, asteroids, and comets have coordinates too, but they are ever-changing as these objects move through the sky. Some telescopes are go-to telescopes, G-O-T-O, and they are named because they go to whatever objects you want. First, though, you must align it with a star or two. Then on your control paddle, tell it what to find. Motors on both axes slew the telescope to the object. Inside the telescope's computer are the coordinates of each object. Most will even calculate the planet's position for that night. Professional telescopes at observatories use the same principle. As you journey through your astronomical endeavors, learn the approximate coordinates for some of the brighter objects and the constellations. This knowledge will help you better plan observing sessions because you'll know what is up and what is not up on any particular night, and it will also help you when you're under the night sky. It's good to memorize where the sun is throughout the year. On or about March 23rd, the sun is at 0 hours right ascension and on the equator. And it moves to 6 hours right ascension and 23 degrees north on June 22nd. On September 23rd, it's at 12 hours right ascension and on the equator. And on December 22nd, it's at 18 hours right ascension and 23 degrees south. This week, for instance, the sun is at about 3 hours 30 minutes, and it increases about 4 minutes per day, and it's at 19 degrees declination. Knowing that, you know you won't be able to see the Pleiades because they're at 3 hours 47 minutes plus 24 degrees, only a few degrees away from the sun. Objects with a greater right ascension than the sun are in the evening sky. So between RA 3 hour 30 minutes and 15 hours 30 minutes, those objects you will see in the evening. Objects between 15 hours 30 minutes and 3 hours and 30 minutes will be in the morning sky. One more thing. Due to something called precession, a slight wobble by the Earth every 26,000 years, the coordinates of a fixed object will change slightly over time. To make it clear, we often refer to the equinox. That is the reference year, and the one we're using now is equinox 2000. meaning what the position was in the year 2000. This changes very little, so for the next few decades, everybody will be using Equinox 2000 for coordinates. Now for the comets that we can see this week. Use Podcast 19, Map 2 to locate four comets in our northern evening and morning sky. This map is made for the morning sky, but at least two of the comets are better seen in the evening sky. The tick marks are for 0 hours universal time. For those who want the actual coordinates of these four comets, download Podcast 19, Comet Positions, from my website. 4 pages, one for each comet. In these documents, the positions are calculated for evening or morning astronomical twilight for the southwestern United States, but can be adjusted to your location. Three of these comets, that is, Comet Pan-STARRS and the two comet Atlases, can be observed in the evening sky now that the moon is gone. All three of these are circumpolar from the mid-northern latitudes and are above the horizon all night long, so technically you could observe them all night long. Our brightest comet is expected to be Comet Swan, C2020F8. It did well 2 and 3 weeks ago, but the past few days it's plateaued even though it had been nearing the sun. Presently, it's magnitude 5 and seems in the last day or two to have begun slowly brightening again. It reaches its closest point to the sun on May 27th and theoretically should be brightening until then. The comet moves northward along your eastern horizon and does not get very high in the sky. On May 18th, a small crescent moon will be 45 degrees to the right of Comet Swan. Comet Swan and Atlas, that is 2019Y4, will be within 5 degrees of each other on May 22nd. This comet has been both south of the equator and south of the sun, meaning those in the southern hemisphere have had a great view of it. It is now north of the equator, and one might think that the northern hemisphere astronomers have the better view of it. Not necessarily true. For objects near the sun, the main factor is whether the object, Comet Swan in this case, is north or south of the sun. The sun is at a declination of about 20 degrees. The comet will reach that point on May 14th, moving north. After that date, the northern hemisphere is favored for viewing Comet Swan. On the other hand, Comet Atlas, 2019Y4, reaches the sun's declination on May 31st, headed south. Then the southern hemisphere will have the better view. But back to Comet Swan. With it north of the sun in the last week of May, it will be visible in the evening sky too in the northwest. By the second week of June, it will be better visible in the northern evening sky than in the morning sky. However, the difficulty with seeing this comet is not just its uncertain brightness, but its closeness to the sun as seen from the Earth. That is known as the elongation, and it remains less than 26 degrees for the next month, decreasing to 16 degrees by mid-June. Seeing an object within 30 degrees of the sun is not easy. You are fighting twilight and the low elevation of the object. For instance, with an elongation of 26 degrees, the best possible geometry determined by the comet and the sun's position and your latitude, when the sun is 18 degrees below the horizon, the comet is only 8 degrees high in the sky. As the comet climbs higher, so does the sun, and the twilight begins to interfere. Comet Swan was farther from the sun, that is, in elongation, it was much greater, in the previous weeks, and we got many great images and observations as it was seen higher in the sky and against a dark sky background. With less elongation, as we have now, we do not have those luxuries. This week and the next week are the best times to view Comet Swan in the morning eastern sky. Use binoculars or a telescope, and then try seeing it with your unaided eye. Look for a structure in the head or coma of the comet, and look for a tail or two. With low elongation, this is a difficult observation, but give it a try and see what you see. A comet in the same part of the sky is Comet 2019 Y4 Atlas. It is also visible in the evening sky and is above the horizon for mid-northern latitude observers for the whole night. It was expected to be putting on a good show about this time, but last month the comet nucleus fragmented. That did not mean the end of the comet, but it is dimmer than it was expected to be. Having said that, it is nearing the sun, and when you heat up a comet nucleus, it usually brightens, so keep an optimistic eye on Comet Atlas. The other Comet Atlas, C2019Y1, remains an evening sky comet and hangs in there at about magnitude 8. It is expected to slowly dim over the next few months. Finally, Comet Pan-STARRS, C2017T2, is still holding steady at about magnitude 8. It is and will remain in our evening sky for the next 3 months. With four comets visible in our sky, brighter than ninth magnitude, and two comets reaching their brightest magnitudes in the next 2 weeks, this is the most exciting time for comets this year. So I hope you have some great weather and get out there and look at these comets. For our unaided eye challenge this week, let's learn a new constellation. This constellation is Hydra, the largest of the 88 constellations, and it takes up 3.2% of the sky. It is also the longest constellation at over 100 degrees. This is one of the few times that you can see the whole constellation at one time. Hydra is Latin for water snake. It is not a very bright constellation, but it does cover a large area. Hydra is identified on Podcast 19, Map 1. It is in the southern hemisphere and extends from Canis Minor at the far west to Libra in the southeast. So while we have the whole constellation framed in the southern sky, get out there this week and learn it. For our binocular challenge this week, it's the open star cluster M67 in the constellation Cancer. It's identified on Podcast 19, Map 1, which you can get from my website. It is south and east of the larger, brighter, and more popular open star cluster M44, which we discussed back in Podcast 10. M67 is 2,600 light-years away and measures 19 light-years across. Through binoculars, it's about 25 arc minutes across and is made up of about 300 stars. Messier thought it had nebulosity, and through low magnification and perhaps through your binoculars, it might appear fuzzy, as many of the stars are faint and blend in to give a fuzzy appearance. But through a telescope, no nebulosity is visible. If you have a telescope, this week we'll be looking at two galaxies, M65 and M66. They are in the constellation Leo, and they are identified on Podcast 19, Map 1. Both of them are spiral galaxies, and they're about 30 million light-years from us. M65 is magnitude 9. It measures 10 by 3 arc minutes in size. M66, which is just east of 65, it's also magnitude 9, but it measures 9 by 4 arc minutes in size. M66 has a star nearby that looks like a supernova. Every time I look at it, I think, oh, is that a supernova? No, it is not. Just north of the pair is another galaxy that Messier did not see. It is NGC 3628. It's seen edge-on. These three galaxies are sometimes known as the Leo triplet. Now for fun with the marathon. The Messier Marathon is usually held in late March, but it can be held any time of the year. The moon will be new on May 22nd. What are the prospects for the Messier Marathon later this month? In the evening, the tough objects near the western horizon will be M46, 47, and 48 in the south, and M35 through 38 in the north. After finding those, you work your way eastward through the night. In the morning, the last objects you'll see will be M52 and 76 and 103 in Cassiopeia, and M34 in Perseus, then also M31, 32, and 110, the Andromeda Galaxy group. And you'll finish up your morning with M33 and M74. Your total count for a Messier Marathon in late May would be about 100 of the 110 objects. You have been listening to Looking Up with Don, podcast episode number 19 for May 13th, 2020. Once again, the related website for this podcast is donmacholz.com. That is spelled donmacholz.com, two H's. God willing and pod willing, I'll be back next week for another episode of Looking Up with Don. We will discuss what's going on in the sky, our weekly check on Comet Atlas and Comet Swan, a third comet which will be going through the bowl of the Big Dipper, and a fourth comet near M81 and M82. We will talk about how Venus will be meeting Mercury in the evening sky, and I'll talk a little bit about the past Riverside Telescope Makers conferences. Thank you for listening. See the sky this week. I'll see you next week.